and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. Now, before we move on, I just want to start this podcast with a personal statement, if you don't mind, Ben.
We've never done a personal statement before. Is this like on your CV, put a personal statement, which nobody ever reads?
No, it's something that I feel I need to talk about. It's something I've not talked about openly in my life before.
And so should our listeners just sort of skip forward a couple of minutes to get to the meat of the podcast instead of listening to your pontifications on nothing? Or
no, I think this is an important thing, Ben.
You okay.
Know, it's quite an emotional thing, actually, that okay. I'm about to tell you.
I apologise. Allow me to give this the gravitas with which it deserves. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a personal statement. Trevor Smith.
I just wanted to let you all know, there's a child. I didn't have Sky TV either.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I didn't realise it was a real sense of poverty that I should have felt about that. In fact, I was 26 before I had Sky TV. So I didn't realise so much of my life was lived in great poverty and neglect, Ben. And it's quite hard to talk about without getting, you know, quite emotional about it, because I didn't realise how much I had in common with No Dishy Sunak.
Is there a phone number we could, you know, send out to the listeners? Some sort of appeal? Maybe get you some Sky subscriptions or something to make up for lost time?
Well, I think just phone Sky. They're the people that can deal with it.
Now, I'm going to say something very unpopular.
Yeah. You felt sorry for him.
I didn't feel sorry for him for not having Sky TV, but I do sympathise in general, because this is exactly why politicians should not answer questions. And this is why they never answer a question, because whenever they do answer a question, even slightly honestly, they are hung out to dry for it. I mean, he absolutely deserved, but this is why they bullshit and talk bollocks all the time.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, because there are people who just avoid politics, obviously we've got a general election in the UK coming up, and the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, who's from a very well-to-do background, I think he's always had money around, but when he was asked a question this week, he said, you know, I missed out on a lot of things as well. I think he was basically trying to say I had a normal childhood. I didn't have.
Basically trying to say I'm like one of you plebs. I've had a normal life, just like you cretins have. Yeah.
But I do agree with you. I find the whole... I've made a vow this time round, and I know it's probably not the best thing to do, because when you are making a decision on voting for a government, you should probably listen to what they've got to say. But I just find listening to any of them so vomit-inducing. You know, you got Keir Starmer. I mean, Keir Starmer was actually asked about being a robot, being so robotic, and he answered it like a fucking robot.
I missed that.
He just went, I am not a robot. He didn't say it in a robot voice. He should have done.
I'd have respected that. A bit of sense of humour.
And then you got Ed Davey. I think Ed Davey's used this election campaign as an excuse to buy a wetsuit. I've not seen Ed Davey do it. Have you not been following Ed Davey, the Lib Dem leader? Whenever I see him on the telly, he's doing something in a wetsuit. He's been paddleboarding. He went on some sort of water slide thing, I think. I think he's just thought, well, we're not going to win the election, so I might as well use the funds. I've always wanted a wetsuit. Get a wetsuit.
So are you now exposing the latest MP expenses scandal? Ed Davey's wetsuit.
I'm sure that it's probably legit in an election campaign. It's all part of the marketing budget. Campaign budget. wetsuit. No, he's become a bit of a man of action. He's been doing lots of things. Not everything in a wetsuit, but the majority of them seem to be in a wetsuit. And I hate those things, and they all do it. And it's not their fault, because it's just the way it all works. But all these things where they have to go and do something that they don't normally do. Now, Ed Davey genuinely seems to be enjoying doing all these. He seems to be enjoying water sports.
sorry, my mind went somewhere else briefly for a moment there.
Well, he's got something in common with Donald Trump, and he seems to genuinely be enjoying it. But most of the others, they have to keep going to, like, they've always got to go to a factory and be seen, you know, with a hammer or,
oh, and a high-vis jacket and a helmet.
Always, yeah, with a high-vis jacket and helmet. Or they got to go somewhere and do something sporty. They've got to be kicking a ball, throwing a ball. You're not made for this sort of thing. Let's not have any of this bollocks.
I know. One of the things that offended me to my very core was I saw footage of David Cameron playing snooker in a working men's club. And, his tie's hanging over the table.
Yeah.
And I just think, you've never played snooker. I'm surprised you even know which way round to hold the cue.
He'd have someone to tell him, though, wouldn't he? He'd go, not that way.
The same thing with Rishi Sunak. You know, he really should have just done the politician thing, not answered the question, because in answering the question, he's made himself look a dick. It's the same exact thing when Theresa May was asked, what's the naughtiest thing you've ever done? Oh, once me and a friend ran through a field of wheat.
Yes.
And she should have just said, listen, I'm not here to answer silly questions. I'm here to talk about politics. And that would be the usual crap we expect from them. But instead, she gave this stupid answer about running through wheat fields, and now we're just going to relentlessly take the piss. So politicians should just stick to never answering questions, because it actually works well for them.
In hindsight, though, you think that if that's the worst thing a politician has done is run through a field of wheat, that's not bad, considering some of the shit some of them got to over the years. Do you remember... it might be before your time. It may have been. It was certainly in the Blair era. There was a thing where Tony Blair had to go out, and he was just heading a ball. It might have even been with Kevin Keegan. I can't remember. Just heading a ball. See, what has that got to do with what you're going to run the country? What is that showing me? Oh, great, he can head a ball. Brilliant, he'll get my vote. I mean, is this the sort of thing that goes? Of course, there was Boris, famously, being asked what he does as a hobby. He made model buses, of course.
Yeah, bless him.
Never seen one. Never saw one of the model buses, did we? That could have easily been proven. He could have brought one out and said, here it is. Here's the number 64. Runs from Thornton Heath to New Addington. One of my favourite models. He could have done it, couldn't he? He was lying.
Yes. It's almost like they'd do it all the time, just lie to us. But yeah, it's this desperate attempt to be the everyman. I'm one of you plebs. Honestly, it's sickening. I'd have much more respect for Mr. Sunak if he just said, you know what, I've been blessed with a life of tremendous wealth and privilege. I know nothing of the struggles of the common man, but I'm going to do my best. I'd have much more respect for that than trying to sort of pretend you're one of us.
I mean, maybe he did say that beforehand. I mean, maybe he said, yeah, I'm very rich, but I didn't have Sky TV. Maybe he did say that. Maybe there was some caveat that's not, you know, you hear things out of context. Let's give him a little bit of a fair crack of the whip. I also try and avoid all the party political broadcasts that have to go on telly this time, because they're always dreadful, aren't they? It's basically always bigging up the party, and you often see it'd be Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer or Ed Davey in a wetsuit going around with a voiceover saying how marvellous they are and how terrible everyone else is. But the other night, I had the telly on, and I think it was the news ended, and they said, now a party political broadcast by the Reform Party. And before I could get to the remote control, before my body started convulsing, it came on, and I was expecting that arsehole Farage and his army of racist bigots and xenophobes to appear on my telly. And
I should say, if you can't find the remote quick enough, you can always dive for the plug and just pull it out of the wall.
Put your fingers. I thought you were going to put your fingers in the socket. Put yourself out of the misery. So anyway, before I could get to that, what appeared on my television screen was a black screen with six words.
Oh, a black screen? They wouldn't have liked that, would they?
Five of the words in white lettering, the final word in blue lettering. And it just said, Britain is broken, Britain needs reform. And I thought, oh, that's the start. Okay, now Farage will appear any moment now. And then it just went on and on and on. I thought, is not just Britain broken, is their political broadcast fucking broken? And it just went on and on. And there was no music, there was no voiceover. And for 5 minutes, must have been 5 minutes, it was just that. And then it finished.
Really?
That was a party political broadcast by the Reform Party. My favourite response, though, to it was somebody on Twitter said, I'm assuming that Reform showing just six words for a couple of minutes was to give their core supporters enough time to read it. I thought that was my favourite thing. I mean, what I will say, in fairness, at least France comes on the telly and says, we're not going to win, but we want to become the official opposition. I suppose at least there's a certain degree of honesty on that front, or just on that front. I did see this thing this week that elections can actually make people sick. A survey and a study in Taiwan suggested that the demand for healthcare services went up during major political campaigns. There was a increase in chest pains, gastrointestinal conditions and physical injuries. I'm imagining that's just people banging their heads against a brick wall for 4 weeks while all the bullshit is being spouted by these people.
I know, I have a hard time trusting any of them, and I know that's a bit cliche, but have you ever spoiled a paper before? I've never done it, but I've always been tempted, but I've never actually done it.
I haven't. I mean, I almost thought about going to do that at one of our more recent elections, because I didn't feel that I could put a cross next to any of them. And I did think, should I just go around and write bollocks on the paper?
Yeah, that would be fine.
I just thought that's a waste of 15 minutes of my day. I think in Australia and certainly other places around the world, it's a legal obligation to vote. You have to go. And I think if that's the case, I don't know whether they do in these countries, there should always be a box that's like, none of them. So you can, if you've got to go, you can at least just say, none of them. They're all shit. Every single one of them is shit. So you got the option to do that. Because if enough people did that, I don't know what would happen. I mean, ultimately, in this country, the way it works, first past the post would win. So if one person voted for one and everyone else went, none, they'd still win, wouldn't they? So yeah, it wouldn't necessarily work well.
And that's how you'd end up with Nigel Farage in charge. So, Trev, I think we were just talking about being quite petty with spoiling ballot papers. And I know we've talked in the past about pettiness.
Yes.
On the podcast. So I found what I think was one of the greatest examples of pettiness I might have ever found in my life.
Oh, wow. Because, I mean, a few weeks ago, I think I came with about six of some of the greatest moments of pettiness in history. So if this is going to trump that, it's going to be cracking.
It could do. I'll let you be the judge. It was a police sting in 1985.
Okay, well, wow, long time ago.
Well, before I was born, and about 25 years after you were, I think. Isn't that right?
I'm not dignifying that as a response.
You're not rising to it. Okay, fair enough.
I'm not rising to that.
Yeah, there was a police sting where they invited thousands of wanted fugitives. They sent out invitations to their last known address, telling them that they'd won a competition to get tickets for a big NFL football game.
Okay.
And all they had to do in order to receive their prize was to call up a number and speak to Michael Detnor and arrange their arrival at this event. They had to attend a brunch, which I thought was very civilised to
very nice. Yeah.
Receive their thing. I, Michael Detnor, or I am Detnor, and Detnor being an anagram of wanted, so I am wanted.
Okay, right. I was trying to work out what that was. I couldn't get it. I was sitting there thinking, I'd stop listening to you because I was just trying to work that out.
So yes, they phoned up Mr. I am Detnor, or I am wanted, to confirm their attendance. The operator would redirect them to the business manager, who was Marcus Cran. Cran backwards is Narc, by the way.
Okay.
And he would temporarily put these fugitives, who would think they were winning a prize, he'd put them on hold And whilst they were on hold, he played some music, which was "I Fought the Law and the Law Won."
Oh, brilliant. I was going to say what they're playing. I was going to throw in Jailhouse Rock, but
that would have been a good choice too.
That's even better though.
Yeah, the invitations apparently were sent by the fictitious firm Flagship International Sports Television, FIST, which happens to share the same acronym as the Fugitive Investigative Strike Team.
Excellent.
So it was for an American football game, and on arrival, their IDs were checked. They were all told to turn up with proof of their ID so that we could verify you're a winner. Or a fugitive.
Yeah.
And they were greeted by a team of very excited cheerleaders who would jump all over them, congratulate them for being winners, hug them.
Well, they've really gone all out on this, get cheerleaders involved.
Yes, although they weren't actually cheerleaders. They were undercover female police officers who were frisking them.
Okay.
To make sure they didn't have weapons on them. Then with their
were they chanting as they were frisking? I mean, I hope they had pom-poms on and were still chanting while they were doing it.
I hope so. Then when they got someone who was a really serious criminal, they would phone ahead and say, "Oh, we've got a double winner here." And that was basically code to say, "Right, we've really got a bad guy here, so make sure you put the cuffs on quick with this guy." There was a detective walking around in a chicken suit as a mascot. There was a gun tucked into his chicken suit, just in case.
Was it cocked?
Very good. There was someone who was dressed up as the master of ceremonies, wearing a top hat, who would get the fugitives in batches of between 10 and 20 to sit down in an auditorium. And at that point, he would tell them that they're about to get their big surprise. That was the trigger word. When he mentioned the word surprise, that the room would then be swarmed by armed officers who would then arrest. Now, the reason I love this story is because they caught 101 fugitives with this operation. But the level of pettiness I love of the unnecessary acronyms, the anagrams, the "I fought the law and the law won" hold music, the chicken suit, the cheerleaders. Just, there were so many ways they could have fucked this investigation up. And it was someone's ego put this thing together. Imagine having to explain to your superior officer, "Why did our big sting fail?" I put in some anagrams and...
I couldn't get my gun out quick enough. I was in a chicken suit, Gov.
There were cheerleaders, a chicken suit, and someone in a top hat. It's just how embarrassing. But similarly, how embarrassing would that be to the guy who got caught and got sent to prison? How were you? What are you here for? Oh, well, there was a chicken suit.
Wow, that's incredible.
That next level pettiness I absolutely admire.
I remember reading once something similar. I mean, not as extravagant. It was, again, a sting by police in the States, and they were after people. Like, these weren't hardened criminals. They were mostly, I think it was driving offences mainly, but they were not paying their fines or not turning up to court and that sort of thing. So they did a similar thing. They sent letters to these people to tell them that this must have been going back a bit, because this is when they must have been expensive, but telling them they'd won a DVD player. And a lot of them turned up on the day to supposedly receive their DVD player and then were ultimately arrested.
I mean, it begs the question, in both of those stories, did these people ever wonder, well, I didn't enter a competition?
Well, I suppose, though, if you get a letter through the door, like if you got a letter through the door tomorrow to say, "Mr. Harmer, you've won a VIP trip to the European Championship final."
Oh, very nice.
You'd go, wouldn't you?
I would have some questions, because usually one of the things I've learned in my short spell on this planet is if something seems too good to be true, it usually is.
I've been looking up some other cop stings.
Oh, yeah?
This is a good one. This was to catch drivers who failed to yield to pedestrians. This was in New Jersey. And they used a Donald Duck costume as a decoy to do it. So people who didn't stop for the duck were ticketed.
That seems a bit harsh.
Well, why shouldn't you? You know, if the law is to yield to pedestrians, and you want to set up a sting to make sure people yield to it, if at least you're going to see a Donald Duck by the side of the road, you should then stop, shouldn't you?
I suppose so. You've just given me a terrible flashback memory of my time spent working with you. Where
what time I dressed up as a duck?
No, you're talking about police stings in cars.
Oh, and yeah.
I used to drive us home every day from our job at the radio station before we were unceremoniously booted. And we were frequently stopped by the Met Police in the centre of London. And we were pulled over by something called Operation Cubo.
That's right, yes, which was about just checking your insurance and MOT, I suppose. It was all that sort of stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, they would have an officer in the road who would notice your car, and he would radio ahead to the officer further down the road, this person needs pulling over. And more often than not, for some reason, we fit the criteria of people who need checking. And I remember, so this was basically a police sting of some sorts. They pull you over with basically no grounds, just some trumped up charge to check you. And I was being, because it's my car, my license, my MOT, my insurance, I was being as polite as possible to the officer. Good morning, officer. How are you?
Yeah.
And he's like, and where are you going today, sir? And then I had mouthy gob in the passenger seat. But what do you mean, where are we going? We're in the centre of London. We could be going fucking anywhere. So
I don't think I was quite as impolite as that.
I'm trying to elbow you in the rib cage. So shut the fuck up. I'm trying to talk to the nice officer here. You're going to get me slung in the fucking clink.
So they must have had some record that they'd stopped you before. Surely they so every fucking week we were stopped. It was like every week, and I think by about week four I was getting quite tired of it.
I think it was because your mouth kept running away from you, so they thought every time you see that license plate, pull them over. It'll get him wound right up.
Drives me mad, that sort of thing. I just think if you stopped you once, there's no need to stop you the week after. Surely they'd have that on. But that, you know, don't get me started on that.
I know, but I had nothing to hide, so I was trying to be polite. But you were going to get me stitched up for a public order offence.
I wasn't being dispolite to the officers. I think
you weren't being friendly.
No, I was being huffy, I think would be the word I'd use. But not enough to get us into trouble. I just wanted to let them know that I wasn't best pleased. Yeah, I've been up since fucking 3 a.m.
Well, I can confirm you made your point.
Now, Ben, I received a message from a regular listener called Debbie this week.
Okay, thank you, Debbie.
Thank you for getting in touch, Debbie. She sent us a quiz that she thought we would be interested in taking on because she knows that we'd like a good quiz.
We do. We do love a good quiz.
And she said, as you two have, she's described us as having Cockney accents. So I don't think we're particularly Cockney.
I've been called many things, but Cockney is not one of them.
No. Now, I'm not sure where Debbie is in the world. I don't think we have might have slightly London accents, but proper Cockney. If we were proper Cockney, you wouldn't be able to understand a word we were saying, frankly. Like proper Cockneys, when they speak, it's like they're in pain.
Yeah.
Sorry, I actually hurt. Sorry, they're in pain when they're talking.
I like to think Danny Dyer, and I like to think of Alan Ford. Do you know who that guy is?
Oh, Alan Ford. Yeah, the old guy who was in the, I think he's in EastEnders now, but he's always in like a gangster, London gangster movies, isn't he?
Yeah, he played Bricktop in Snatch.
That is
what I would consider a Cockney villain.
He's the sort of bloke in one of those films. He'd always turn up. He'd be like the main sort of nasty man. He'd go, you fucking shut it. he's going to turn up. So anyway, Debbie, I'm not sure whether we're full on Cockneys, but it's nice of you. If we're full on Cockneys, we might have sounded like Dick Van Dyke in New Mexico. It's weird, though, because I don't know what my accent is. Right? I've lived in Croydon all my life, which is in South London, in Surrey. actually. Although people do argue about whether Croydon's in Surrey. I think it used to be.
But I think Surrey people from Surrey argue that Croydon's not in Surrey.
Well, I think basically people from Surrey, well, we don't fucking want it. So I don't think we are technically in Surrey anymore. But I was in the shop once, just round the corner, and I'm at the counter paying, and a woman comes up to me and goes, where's your accent from? You're Cornish, are you?
Nothing Cornish?
Cornish. A couple of times people have said that I sound Cornish. Irish I've had before. I just think, where are you getting? There's nothing in that. Northern, just generic Northern. I don't know where you're getting that from. So I know my accent might not be the easiest to place, but it's certainly not Cornish or Irish.
No, I've never thought of you as Cornish or Irish, really.
No.
I'm aware
I wish I wish I was Cornish. I do like the Cornish accent. I think that's it's quite a nice...
Actually, you can lean into it quite well.
Well, I know. It's one of the ones I can sort of do. I can't do... I'd love to be able to do a good Scottish accent. I think we discovered fairly recently on the podcast I can't do Scottish. I'd love to do quite like a Welsh accent, but I can't do... I can say a few words and then it goes. And then it sort of wanders into something that could be deemed racist. So I tend not to dwell on that one for too long. So I can't really do many accents, but the Cornish one, I think I can sort of get that one going quite well.
Now, aren't you a professional voiceover?
Yeah, but I never claim to do accents. There are voiceovers who can do them and those that can't. And I'm on my CV, it's not on there.
Well, you never know. When you reach a certain age, you could work for the Archers. Is that still going?
That's always going to be going. That's what I'm aiming for. When I'm in my sort of 60s, when most of the rest of the work has dried up, most of it already has, to be fair. But by my 60s, I might just be read, because hopefully my voice will get a little bit, you know, down there. And then we go, are we going to the farm today? Come on then, darling, let's go to the farm today. Because I don't know what happens on the Archers, but I'd imagine it's just going to the farm a lot.
I don't even know what station the Archers is on.
It's on Radio 4, mate. And, but no, I've never really listened to it, but I think it's, you know, it's been going for years. It's very popular, and my hope is that one day they'll phone me up and they'll go, I don't know why they're talking to you. I'm assuming everyone talks like that.
They're in character, mate. They're in character.
They phone me up and they go, hello, is that Trevor? They go, yes, it is. Would you like a party, Archers? Yes, I very much would. Thank you very much. what will my role be? Farmer. Oh, brilliant.
So long story short, we've been sent a quiz.
We sent a quiz, and it's a Cockney rhyming slang.
Jesus, what a tangent. Okay, we went from you receiving a quiz from a listener to you becoming a member of the Archers cast.
Yeah, I've got to use this for auditions at some point, mate. I've got to get work in. So, so are you a Freddy?
Pardon? Am I ready? Okay, I understand.
It's not going well already, this quiz, is it? You can't get that one. Okay, so we've got some Cockney rhyming slang. We've got the multiple choice, by the way, so we should do all right on these.
Well, I think in the interest of fairness, we should try and have a stab at it before we hear the options.
Okay, well, that's a bit unfair because I've got the options in front of me.
Okay. Disregard that.
Hang on. No, what I'll do. No, it's all right. All right, the first one I've seen.
There's a lot of planning in this podcast.
Well, I've been too busy practicing my accents. I don't have time to be planning for this shit. Sorry, Debbie. We do give a lot of time to the stuff you send us.
So yes.
No, I can do it. I've seen the first one, but I'll just be careful how I scroll.
Okay.
First one's easy anyway. But I'm hoping they're all going to be this easy. Apple and pears.
Well, I mean, this is one of the keys to Cockney rhyming slang, is often the last word is the one you want to pay attention to. So,
because that's the sad thing when I was trying to come up with something Freddy. I know what I should have said. It's too late now. Because I was trying to think, well, how can I get to Freddy? And I couldn't think of it. I should have said, are you Rod, Jane and Freddy? That's where I should have gone with that.
But so often, the last word is what matters. That's the one that's going to rhyme with something. So apples and, you can ignore. So apples and pears, stairs.
Stairs. The other options, by the way, were dares, fares, and then stairs. We're going stairs, Of course it is. Right, it next is. One. April showers.
Ooh.
I've not heard of this one.
No.
Is it flowers? Flares.
Why would you need slang to say April showers, which takes more effort to say than just flowers?
Well, apples and pears takes more effort to say than stairs, doesn't it? I mean, that's the...
Again, that's true.
Whole thing of the Cockney rhyming slang is it's no rhyme or reason to it. It just exists.
Okay, I'll need the options.
Well, the options are there's flowers, towers, and powers. So
now I thought powers.
Powers. April I showers, powers.
But I think unless you're talking to the old Bill, the police...
Mm. Yeah.
That you probably wouldn't need to say that very often, would you?
Unless so you're it's talking probably... about the Marvel Universe in an East End pub.
It's probably more likely to be flowers, which was your first instinct.
It was my instinct, so I'm going to go flowers.
Go for it.
Yeah, flowers it is. Right, next one. Another easy one, this one. Dog and bone.
Yes, again, pay attention to the last word. Dog and means nothing. Bone, phone.
Phone, yeah, let's not mess around with that one. Okay, next one, fairly straightforward. Rosie Lee. No, oh, nice cup of Rosie Lee.
Well, I think you've given it away by saying a nice cup of Rosie Lee. I think it might be a cup of tea.
Well, the options were B or C. It could be a nice cup of C. Good, there you go. Going on the seaside, fill up a cup with C. It's what we do. It's what us Cockneys do. Go down
all
the sea. Have a nice, you know, it's tea, you know. It's not faff about. Oh, I don't think I've heard of this one. Chicken Jalfrezi. Chicken Jalfrezi. Oh, it's about chicken Jalfrezi. Have you heard this one?
I have a knee-jerk response to it.
Okay, so I think in my mind I've got an idea, but yeah, go on.
I wonder if we're on the same page. Ignore chicken jowl. Yeah. Focus on Frazee. Crazy.
Crazy. The options are Daisy, Hazy, Crazy.
I'm sticking with Crazy.
The only reason I'd throw Hazy in as an option is because when you think back... You know, to the dim, dark past. Well, not that far away, even in the 50s and 60s, when they had the proper pea supers and the smog in London, they might have gone, oh, it's right chicken Jalfrezi today. But then they called it a pea super, didn't they? There's more the pea super, I guess. Well, that was because of the colour of it, wasn't it? So that's not rhyming slang. But I think crazy.
I must admit, mate, you lost me a few sentences ago on this pea super stuff. No idea.
I sort of felt like I was going off on my own little tangent there, talking to no one but myself. I think this is a sort of image of my future. I'll be in a home somewhere, and I'm going, chicken Jalfrezi, it could be the pea super, couldn't it? It could be the pea super. And I've just been going off on one. I'm going, oh, he's off again.
Mr. Smith requires his medication.
Is it time? Is it milking time? It would go crazy.
You should be so lucky.
Right, next one. Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc.
Ooh,
I mean, my instinct is park.
No, I thought snark, but that doesn't...
Snark?
That's too obscure a word. Can I hear the options?
Okay, the options are dark, bark, and park. Park is in...
Ooh. Seeing as you guessed park, and park is an option, I'll lean it towards you.
Well, dark seems to, like, that feels like it could be...
Could you see it? No, it's too Joan of Arc.
It's too Joan of Arc. Or popping down the Joan of Arc, going down the park, going down the Joan of Arc.
50-50
I mean, park,
this one.
Park was my instinct.
Go with your gut.
It is park. It is park.
Well done.
All right.
Have we got one wrong yet?
No.
Thanks. Dramatic pause. That's good.
Okay, next one. Butcher's Hook. I know this.
Oh, I know this. I know this.
Yeah, let's not faff about it. It's look.
It is
look.
You
know that. Yeah. Jollof Rice.
I'm sorry, Jollof Rice.
Jollof Rice.
That's got me stumped, that one.
Okay.
I know it's something to do with jollof, so it's something that rhymes with rice.
Yeah.
So price.
Price. Nice.
Dice.
Do you want the options?
Yes, please.
Okay, the options are twice, mice, and nice. But again, my instinct was nice. Go, oh, it's John of Rice, that is. Oh, it's John of Rice.
I agree. Let's go with nice.
Because I, if it was mice, I would have heard of that. Okay, there's fucking John of Rice back again. We'll go with nice?
Yes.
Nice is right.
We are absolutely storming this.
So far, so good. Drum and bass. Drum and bass.
Okay, my instinct says face.
Well, no, because boat race is face, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. Oh, okay. We're on the back foot now.
Unless it's another one for face. Okay, there's race, place. Oh, and face is in there, actually. It's an option. I think race I'm discounting.
Yeah, I mean, because race isn't a word you'd need enough... You wouldn't use it enough to require rhyming slang for it.
You'd think not.
They've raided the old drum and bass.
Place,
I took that smile off his drum and bass.
Oh. I just think because you've got boat race for face...
This could be our... I mean, I was just bragging about how well we're doing and now we've stumbled. Do you want to go with place?
We might finally get one ping pong. I'll leave the... See, I'm making them up as well. I'll leave the decision to you, mate. You decide.
I know you're making it up, but it's all bollocks, isn't it? It's all of it. Seeing as boat race...
All 233 episodes we've done. Yeah.
Seeing as boat race is face, let's say drum and bass is... place.
Okay. Yes, it is.
Hey,
I can't believe how seriously I'm beginning to take this.
I know. What a waste of a life.
Next one. Custard jelly.
Oh, it's custard got to jelly. Be. It's got to be the telly.
It's got to be the telly, isn't it? Let's have a look at the. Whoa, I don't know though. When I look at the,
Could be smelly.
Smelly's not in there. No, I'll tell you the options. Deli. I'm discounting that straight away.
No.
Telly. Is obviously there, but belly is also there. And I'm just thinking because belly, you know, jelly belly, whether that could be your old custard jelly.
Well, you put belly. Custard and jelly in your belly, don't you?
Yeah. Although telly was my instinct as well. Now I've seen belly out there. I think maybe belly.
I would say that you're more likely in common conversation to be talking about the telly than you are about your belly. So for that logic alone, I would say it must be telly. Oh,
I don't know, though. Cockneys, you see, mate, they talk about different things. Yeah, it's different. All right, we'll go for telly. We're going to go for
Thank
telly.
Thank you.
It is telly.
Thank you.
Well done. Okay. God, I don't know how many more of these there are, but we'll carry on, shall we, for now?
We're having fun. No one else is, but we are.
S Club 7.
I've
never heard of this one.
Heaven?
Seven, you think heaven.
Do we have options?
Yeah, I can give you the options. Heaven, melon, Devon.
Well, I did say heaven.
It's got to be heaven, isn't it?
Again, how many times would Cockneys be referring to melons or Devon? It's got to be heaven.
Well, no, the melons down the old market, wouldn't they? They were going, four for a pound, US Club Sevens.
No. I mean,
yeah, they would. Five for a pound, US Club Sevens. We'd be doing all that.
I'm going to stick with heaven. I want to win this quiz. I don't just want to win it. I want to get it 100%.
Okay. Well, it is heaven. So that's
there you go.
Bobby Moore.
Could this be a double Cockney?
What do you mean?
Well, could it be Bobby Moore, a score, and a score means something else as well, doesn't it? What's a score in money? Is it 20 quid?
It's 20. 20 is a score, isn't it?
So Bobby Moore, a score, 20 quid. So it's our first possible double Cockney.
Okay, well, I'll give you the options. Score is up there. Door and four.
Four, no.
Four is in the number four.
It won't be four.
Right, so get rid of that. Could be door, though. Open the Bobby door, mate. Get the Bobby door for me. Come on, love. Open the Bobby door. Yeah, fucking move on.
Wasn't it Bobby Moore? Because you just said Bobby door about three times in a row.
Well, it's very confusing, isn't it, Stan?
You've simplified Cockney rhyming slang by saying the actual word you mean instead of the rhyme.
Well, stop fucking about. Say the first bit. That's the fun bit, isn't it?
Now, of course...
Open the Bobby door, mate.
We can't overlook that Bobby Moore was famous for scoring. So yeah. Bobby Moore score makes a lot of sense.
All right, I'm going to go with score then. I mean,
Hang on a minute. Well, we haven't committed. Right. Are we happy with this?
Fucking move on, mate.
Would the Cockneys be talking more about scores or doors? I'm going to go with score. They're talking about the football. Score. What's the Bobby Moore?
Score is the answer.
Yes!
Okay.
I think if you listen to this back, I have been the guiding force of this Cockney quiz. You have questioned me at every turn, and I have always been right.
Well, that means you're probably more of a true Cockney than I am. Right.
It's a shame that I sound like a plummy twat, but...
My penultimate one, kick and prance.
I mean, I think I know what that is, but I'll let you have a go.
Well, my instinct would be dance.
Yes.
The other options here are glance and France. Where are you going on holiday, mate? Oh, I'm going to the old kick and prance, all right.
I think I'm happy with our answer. Yeah, that's a good one.
It's right. Dance is the right answer. Right, last one.
And we're on a perfect score right now, yeah?
I think we're here. We're on a perfect Bobby Moore.
Uncharted right. territory. This is incredible.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
Was that it?
No. I'm just looking at this one. I've never heard this. Right. Clockham and Pree.
I don't even understand what that means.
No. Clockham. Well, Clockham's like look, isn't it? I mean, when you clock
yeah.
something.
To your, notice something. To clock
notice
it.
Something.
Yeah.
So would it be like...
And Pree.
See? Like notice and see?
How are we... Not that it matters, but how are we spelling Pree?
P-R-E-E.
The fuck is that?
I have no idea. Do you want to, we better look at the options here, haven't we?
Oh my God, this is a real cliffhanger now, because I'm in trouble with this.
Right, so the options are B, as in the insect, glee, and C. Now, I think just because clock is in there, it's got to be C.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it will be glee, because again, how many times would that be relevant?
Well, I don't know, they're always having the fucking knees up, aren't they, the Cockneys?
Again, B, for the same reason, you wouldn't say I've been suffered from a swarm of... What was it?
Clockham and Prees.
No, you wouldn't say that. Your initial instinct was C, so I'm happy to go along with that.
Okay, I'm going to go with it.
It's a big moment.
It's the right answer.
Well played.
Wow. We've got a full dead mouse.
You're just making up now.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, I've got a couple of recommendations for you.
Excellent. This is the time of the podcast where we all sit round cross-legged by your feet as we listen to the great Trev recommendations. And you have been knocking them out of the park at the moment.
I do feel quite, you know, avuncular at this point of the podcast. I sort of feel like there's a little roaring fire. You're all sitting around. I'm sitting here probably with a pipe. recounting my days on the Archers, but also telling you good things you can go and watch and listen to.
No, it's brilliant. I listened to your recommendations last week with James O'Brien talking to Frank Skinner and Danny Wallace. They were brilliant listens. Big Jeff, listener of the show, he's been on the strength of your recommendation. He's been binge watching Rebus recently. So,
Rebus!
People are listening to you, believe it or not. I mean, it's me and my family mainly, but people are listening.
That's the power I wield. It's extraordinary, isn't it? By the way, just if you like listening to James O'Brien, he's just been on a podcast that I listen to called My Time Capsule with Michael Fenton Stevens. It's been running for several years. I've recommended it before, but James O'Brien's just been on, and he's an interesting listen. He talks a little bit about politics, as you'd expect, but it's just about his life. Generally, people just talk about their life. They have to pick five things to go in a time capsule, four things they want to keep, one thing they want to get rid of, and it's just a really good concept, and James O'Brien's very good on that, so that's well worth a listen. This week I'm going to recommend, first of all, a documentary. It's quite a sad documentary, but it's so enthralling. I don't know if you remember the footballer J. Lloyd Samuel, who was tragically killed in a car accident a few years back. And this is a documentary on Netflix called The Footballer, His Wife and the Crash. And it's one of those stories where, sadly, after he'd passed away, the wife found out lots of things about J. Lloyd's life that she didn't know. And the thing about the documentary is it's not a piece to destroy the legacy of someone, which you'd think, well, that would be an awful thing to do when somebody's not around to defend themselves. It's just a fascinating documentary that looks at all sides of the story, but also shows him as that he was a good man in a lot of ways. You know, there was a lot of good to him, and there were just some parts of his life that that just sort of were very different to what his wife thought.
That sounds ominous, to say the least.
It's a fascinating documentary, but you know, it's very moving as well. You know, because it's someone's husband. Well, I won't give too much away, but it's there's a lot of sadness around it all as well. But it's I found it absolutely fascinating.
You've laced that recommendation with intrigue. I'm quite interested now.
Okay, the other thing I'm going to recommend, just to lighten the mood a touch, because this is quite a bittersweet comedy that I've come a little bit late to. It was on Channel 4. I think there's been two series now. I've just watched the first series that's just appeared on Netflix. It's called Big Boys, and it's a comedy. It's sort of based on the life of the person who's written it, and it's about his university life and coming out to his family, but he finds his friend at university who's got his own struggles, and it's very you know, there's a lot of sort of adult humour in it. It's quite puerile at times, but I don't mind that. I'm not above a knob joke.
I think listeners who suffered through this podcast, even for this episode alone, have pretty much got our level.
But it's incredibly well written, because it's got humour in it, some really funny moments, and it's got some really moving, quite dark, disturbing moments in it as well. I think it's one of the best written comedy dramas I have seen in a very long time. And I'm really looking forward to watching the second series, which is on Channel 4 on their catch-up. I believe there's a third series to come. It's not going to be to everyone's liking. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea at all. But I have to say, it's the best thing I've seen in quite a while.
High praise indeed.
There we are. So that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trevor and Bear on X, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.